Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari. Jaya Gopinjanavallabha Girivaradhari. Jasodanandanam Braja Janaranjana Jamunatiravanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari. Jayam Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivraja Pacharya Ashutara Shatashi Shimada Savayan Graceshila Prabhupada Ki Grantaraj Sri Bhagavatam Ki Gaur Premanandi. All glories to the Assembly of Devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga. Om Aknana Tamirandasha Nananjana Shalakaya Chakshuna Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Sapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha kalputurubhyascha kripa sindubhya revacha patita nam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha jaya shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda shri advaita gadarha shrivasari gaura bhakta vrinda hare krishna 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 hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 5, Text Number 3. Yat tatra guruna proktam shushruve nupapar tatra. Nasadu manasa mene swaparasad grahashrayam. others. Yet, which tatra, there in the school, guruna, by the teachers, proktam, instructed, shru shruve, heard, anupapata, recited, cha, and na, not, sadhu, good, manasa, by the mind, mene, considered, swa, of one's own, para, and of others, asat graha, by the bad philosophy, ashrayam, which was supported. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Was the previous verse recited? Because it didn't have a purport. Probably not. I'll just read the verse. Just one yesterday. I'll just read the verse before and then the translation to text 3. So Prahlad Maharaj was already educated in devotional life, unbeknownst to any of the demons. But when his father sent him to those two sons of Shukracharya, Shanda and Amarka, that's what you were all hearing about last time, to be educated, they accepted him at their school, along with the other sons of the Asuras. Text 3. Prahlad certainly heard and recited the topics of politics and economics taught by the teacher, but he understood that political philosophy involves considering someone a friend and someone else an enemy, and thus he did not like it. Purport. Politics involves accepting one group of men as enemies and another group as friends. Everything in politics is based on this philosophy, and the entire world, especially at the present, is engrossed in it. The public is concerned with friendly countries and friendly groups, or enemy countries and enemy groups. But as stated in Bhagavad Gita, a learned person does not make distinctions between enemies and friends. Devotees especially do not create friends and enemies. A devotee sees that every living being is part and parcel of Krishna, mamai bhangsho jiva bhutaha. Therefore, a devotee treats friends and enemies equally by trying to educate them both in Krishna consciousness. Of course, atheistic men do not follow the instructions of pure devotees, but instead consider a devotee their enemy. A devotee, however, never creates a situation of friendship and enmity. Although Prahlada Maharaj was obliged to hear the instructions of Shanda and Amarka, he did not like the philosophy of friends and enemies, which forms the basis of politics. He was not interested in this philosophy. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So Prahlad Maharaj, being young, was sent to by his father to the school of the Daityas, which was being led by the sons of Shukracharya, Shanda, and Amarka. So yat tatra guruna proktam. So those gurus, materialistic gurus, they proktam means they instructed him. So what did they instruct him in? And friends and enemies, economic development, and so on, politics. So shushuve anupapartacha. So he heard that, and he recited that also. Just like when we were in school, and I remember in the kindergarten, I think you would have to go to the face the corner and face the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag. of the United States of America. That's all I remember. Because after that, I didn't understand what was going on. I just want to play. What is all this nonsense? So we would hear these things, we were taught, and then we would also recite, although it didn't have any particular meaning for us. So similarly, Prahlad Maharaj, he also heard these things, and he would also recite them as a matter of course. But it did not affect him whatsoever. He was not at all moved by it positively, let's say. In the third line, it says, Nasaudu manasa mene. What was his consideration of the things that he was hearing and reciting? Mene means consideration or his opinion. His opinion, manasa mene. What was he thinking about all these things? When I was pledging allegiance to the flag, I was thinking about outside the swings. And so my mind, although hearing and reciting, it didn't have any particular meaning. But I didn't have any deep insight also as such about politics and so on, which is actually what was going on. It's the same thing going on now that was going on in the time of Prahlad Maharaj. I pledge allegiance to the flag. You're learning about friends and enemies. They started at a very young age. So that after you, from there, they will provide you a killer load of false information, which we call history class. And if you got a major killer load of it, you took AP history. Yeah, I think some of you must have. I also took AP U.S. history. And what did you learn about in AP class? You learn about friends and enemies, and basically how U.S. was always right, and they always did the right thing. So it's the same thing going on now that was going on then. Of course, as we get older, we tend to become more and more absorbed in those falsities. And then our psychology becomes set for the rest of life in terms of friends and enemies. But as a young child, you're not able, usually, we're not like Prahlad Maharaj. So our considerations aren't so deep. I was pledging allegiance to the flag, but all I cared about was playing. Here, Prahlad Maharaj is also reciting and hearing about politics and so on. But manasa mene, what was his thinking about all these things? Na sadhu, this is not good. Sadhu means like good. Just like if you want to say someone is good, you may sadhu, sadhu, which means he is very good, he is very good, like that. So na sadhu manasa. In his mind, he was thinking this is not at all good. Swa para, to think in terms of oneself, this is for me. And in terms of other, this is asa graha ashrayam. This sort of thinking is sheltered in, ashrayam means shelter. Asat graha, Prabhupada translates it as bad philosophy. This sheltered in bad philosophy. The word graha, we'll hear later on in the same chapter, this word asat graha will be used quite a bit in this chapter. The word graha also means a crocodile. So asat, this was sheltered, you can say, in the ocean of samsara, this sort of thinking is sheltered in the ocean of samsara where the crocodiles of asat on these false notions will devour you. Just like in the beginning of chapter 2, it says, those who learn from Lord Chaitanya can cross over the ocean of samsara, which is filled with many crocodiles of bad philosophy, in the second chapter of the CC. Kaviraj Goswami composes a verse like that, that this ocean of samsara is filled with many crocodiles of bad philosophy, prominent of which is this philosophy of politics, which absorbs people's minds so much that there's practically no question of them considering the value of spiritual instruction. So Prahlad was hearing and reciting these things, but he was not at all interested. It is just like another example would be given of, who was that? Raghunath Das, when he was a grihastha. So he was always trying to escape his household life, because generally household life is considered the root cause of samsara and the defeat of the human mission. Of course, a certain type of grihastha life. Griha aramata yanmula karma bandha parabhavaha. Shukadeva Goswami is inquiring about Priyavrata, and he says, how is it that Priyavrata was apparently enjoying householder life? Grihe aramata, which is the yanmula, the root cause of the bondage of samsara and the defeat of the human mission. And so Raghunath Das will be having such an idea of household life also. So he was always seen trying to escape. So Lord Chaitanya told him, don't be a crazy fellow. You be here only for now. And externally, you show yourself to be very much interested in the affairs of family life. But internally, you keep your faith in me. And then at the right moment, you'll be able to escape household life. You understand when that right moment comes. Later on, he found out that right moment and then he escaped household life. Anyway, not going to the story. The idea here is that externally, he was showing himself to be very much engaged in mundane household affairs. But internally, his consciousness was fixed on Krishna. So also with Priyavrata. So similarly, Prahlad Maharaj, although apparently hearing and reciting, he was not at all impacted by that because he had already heard from Narada Muni and could make proper discrimination. So what is that proper discrimination? Prabhupada is mentioning here. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, a learned person does not make distinctions between enemies and friends. So that verse of the Bhagavad Gita, Vidyavanaya Sampane, Brahmani Gavi Hasini Shuni Chaiva Shapakecha, Pandita Samadarshinaha. Those who are pandit, pandit means learned. So what does it mean to be learned? One can see the difference between the material energy, the spiritual energy behind it, namely the spirit souls, and the source of both. This is Prabhupada's definition of a pandit. He sees what is the Maya Shakti, the potency of the material energy. He sees the Jiva Shakti, the Jivas who are in bondage in the material Shakti, and he sees the source of both, the Supreme Lord. This is called the learned person. So the Pandit is Samadarshinaha. Samadarshinaha means he sees with equal vision. He doesn't make distinctions between one body and another, one group and another, one friend and another, and so on. This is a learned person. So there are different categories of equal seers, those who see equally. They're impersonalists. They also are called Samadarshinaha. There are yogis. They're also called Samadarshinaha. And there are devotees. They're also called Samadarshinaha. So the impersonalist and the Paramatmavadis, this verse from the Bhagavad Gita particularly talks about someone who has seen the super soul. The impersonalists can see that all jivas are just spirit souls encased in material bodies, in short. Those who see Paramatma can see the super soul is pervading everything, and everyone is coming from the super soul, and therefore there is no distinction. And the devotees seeing equally is a little bit different. They can see that all the souls are having some relation to Krishna as Krishna's potency. And therefore, Prabhupada writes, a devotee treats friends and enemies equally by trying to educate them both in Krishna consciousness. So you'll see Prahlad Maharaj manifesting such an equal vision. Towards his father, he will try to educate him, although that didn't turn out too successful. And he will also try to educate his friends, which we heard in the last chapter was very successful. So devotee's equal vision is that he tries to provide enlightenment to those who are in bondage. But his consideration in terms of differences created by the Maya Shakti is that this is not very good to see in such a way. You'll have a very nice verse in the beginning of the 28th chapter, I believe, of the 11th canto, which mentions how one should not criticize or praise the qualities, paraswabhava karmani, the activities and psychologies of the conditioned souls. One should not praise or criticize their activities and their psychology. It means like their idiosyncrasies. They talk loudly, they chew food loudly. These are the sort of things that generally tend to irritate us. Someone has a particular sort of idiosyncrasy. So one should not praise or criticize that. Rather, you should just simply see them as a combination of the Maya Shakti and the Jiva Shakti, the material energy and the conditioned souls bound up by the material energy. But that actually they all are part of one absolute truth because they're all coming from Krishna. And then the verse says that those who do indulge in this praising and criticizing of the activities and idiosyncrasies of others, then what happens to them? Their intelligence is quickly deviated from their real self-interest by being absorbed in that which is asat, asat abhinivesha. So the same idea is being spoken of here, that this This notion of swapara, this is mine, this is for others, and praising that which is mine, criticizing that which is others, it dismantles the intellect. Graha, asat, such considerations is like a crocodile, which dismantles the intelligence and disallows it for understanding spiritual subject matters. So the case in point is Hiranyakashipu. He was not able to understand what his son was speaking to him. Why? Because he had already been fully devoured by the crocodile of this bad philosophy. Whereas his friends, they were young boys. We'll hear about this later. Because they were young boys, they had a sort of childish, just like I was saying, I was pledging allegiance to the flag, but it didn't impact because I was a young boy. I was still interested in playing. So also the demons, they were also young boys. They were just interested in sense gratification too. So they weren't so much interested in topics of philosophy and politics. And so not being so devoured, they were able to hear some, Prahlad's association was very beneficial for them for that reason. That is not to convey the idea that being able to accept devotional sangha depends necessarily on certain material considerations. But it does give idea to the notion that those who are less devoured by bad considerations, they may be more open to hearing truth. Just like Lord Chaitanya, why did he leave Navadvip and decide to preach in South India? Srila Prabhupada specifically comments because in Navadvip, Navadvip was a place of so-called learning. And therefore, they were already captured wholesale by materialistic thinking and mundane philosophy. And so Lord Chaitanya went to South India because it was, I forget the exact language Prabhupada uses, but something to the effect that it was more favorable for preaching Krishna consciousness. So you see, those who are too much absorbed in these things, and it manifests in many ways nowadays, the fight for our rights. This is the most popular way that it manifests in the modern age. Marriage equality is a popular one. Racial equality is a popular one. Gender equality is a popular one. So much so that now they're wanting to create in colleges what they call this gender neutral bathrooms, so that everyone can just go and use the same bathroom and so on. This is a situation. And you try to tell them about the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita. You see their consciousness is so absorbed by the fight for the rights that they consider spiritual knowledge not practical or may be useful, but after we solve these sorts of issues. And those issues will never get over. And this way, asagraha ashrayam, they are devoured by the crocodile of asat. I couldn't prepare a little bit more, but this is basically the point here. I think I'll stop. It's 8:08. Any questions or comments? Yeah. I think today we're Mother Don and Kaylee Pritushawa Prabhu presenting downstairs. Are they doing that today? No. She looks in disbelief.
Was she informed?
Oh, you're not presenting.
Okay. Well, Daitapur can talk to her after class, maybe.
We heard that you were going to show us a thing on the...
So this idea of friends and enemies, I'm thinking about sometimes you may have like a disagreement about the science of devotion with another devotee. And, you know, sometimes if that devotee is like younger, then people think maybe you're lording yourself over. And if they're older, then they think you're being disrespectful. And
if they're older,
like if suppose they think some very senior devotee is giving a class and I tell, or someone else.
Yeah, you have a disagreement.
Yeah, and I have evidence for it. This is what the Shastras are saying. Then people will think, oh, you're being so disrespectful, you know?
Because this is a senior devotee.
He must be right.
The fact that you disagree with him inherently means that you're disrespecting him.
Right.
Because it can't mean that maybe you've heard from another senior Vaishnava who may be disagreeing with that senior Vaishnava.
And I see this a lot, this kind of friends and enemies perspective when it comes to like philosophical disagreements in a spiritual community. So what is the responsibility of the person who is disagreeing? Like should he keep those thoughts private, or should he share them with other devotees, and then they might, you know, what is the responsibility of such a devotee? That's my first question. There's a second question too, but it's slipping my mind right
so
now.
So there appears to be friends and enemies in the community of Vaishnavas. You're pointing out the particular element and philosophical disagreement amongst Vaishnavas. And so it appears to be something like a friends and enemies situation. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he writes about ass-like and swan-like neophytes and madhyam adhikaris. So the ass-like neophytes, they are very externally orientated, and they fight over differences in terms of external considerations. So for example, give an example of an ass-like neophyte. Because we have the bigger institution, we're the better tradition. You know, because you just got that little small little farm thing over there that no one really knows about. That itself is inherently proving that you're lesser than us. And because we have the bigger institution, we're better than you. Or we have certain standards. For example, in ISKCON, we follow 16 rounds. We have an even very popular misunderstanding, 16 plus 4 equals BTG. So unless you're chanting 16 rounds, you're not bona fide devotee. And so you find out that that group over there, that moth or that particular guru, tells his disciples to chant only this many amount of rounds, or they make the disciples chant rounds that they know they can commit to, which is like kind of makes sense. You make a commitment that you know you can keep, instead of making a commitment you know you might not be able to keep. And, well, because that means that devotee must be deviating because he's not following 16 rounds. So this is an ass-like neophyte devotee. He's putting a lot of weight on external considerations. And so when there's differences in externals, he tends to fight, neophyte. We like to also joke like that. The neophytes will fight. So this is the ass-like neophyte devotees. The swan-like neophyte devotees, they are also externally orientated, but they are trying to make progress sincerely. So they don't bother themselves with such sorts of fights, even though it does irritate them a little bit. There may be some disturbance internally. Why that guru is only telling 2 rounds? Or why they have this sort of standard? That may cause some, because they're neophyte. So psychologically, they're already externally orientated. But they know that is not the essence of Krishna consciousness, and they're trying to make progress. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur refers to such persons as swan-like neophytes. Then there are ass-like madhyamadhikaris. So the madhyamadhikaris, they've overcome the encumbrances created by gross external considerations, but they'll fight over philosophical issues and get real and tend to not see the essence of certain points. For example, I'll give 2 popular ones. The fall of the jiva issue. Did the jiva fall? Did he not fall? This is one where there tends to be, at least in our community, a big divide or understanding may appear. And another one is bhakti inherent or not? And the jiva. So in this way, there will be disagreement because, anyway, there's disagreement. We'll just leave it at that for now. And but if you look at the essence of a lot of these points, rather the jiva fell down or the jiva didn't fall down, the point is that the jiva has to get out of the material world. Or if bhakti is inherent or is not inherent, and both considerations, okay, suppose you think bhakti is inherent, then a sadhu has to activate that inherent bhakti. So without the sadhu sangha, that bhakti will never get activated. That's in one perspective. Another perspective is bhakti isn't inherent because bhakti is the swarup shakti of Krishna. So it can't be inherent in the tatasya shakti, the jiva. So that means that bhakti has to be given by a devotee. But in both scenarios, you end up coming to the lotus feet of a devotee. Either a devotee activates it, or a devotee is giving it to you.
So there's nothing that, so there would be disagreement, but there's nothing to split the family over, you know, and create factions. So the swan-like madam adhikaris will see that. Okay, there is disagreement, but that's nothing to split the family over. You know, the main point, the essence of either way your understanding is more or less bringing you to the same point. Now, I know that when it gets to more subtle aspects of the philosophy, you have to become more and more precise. When you're just dealing in a more generic way, then precision may not be required. But as you're becoming more and more subtle in your discussions, precision is required. And so it is important to understand precisely the philosophy so as not to create a confusion about some of these subtle topics. But even with that in consideration, the swan-like madhamas know that this is the essence of that point. So there's nothing to break the family over. Whereas the ass-like madhama adhikaris, they'll make big to-do about these sorts of issues. Jiva tattva, bhakti tattva. Of course, guru tattva, that one is kind of serious. That one you have to understand because that's an important consideration in our progressive growth. Anyway, in any case, they make very heavy to-do about these sorts of issues, and then they split the family up over these things. They'll say, unless you believe in this way, then you can't be a part of this community. You'll be ostracized or you'll be censored if you disagree. So that means that's an ass-like madhyama. He may not be so much attached to external considerations, but he's not catching the essence of these points. He's not able to tolerate that there can be a disagreement. Then amongst us, what happens amongst us is that we hear from different devotees. We'll just say senior devotees. So then one type of neophyte devotee is hearing from one type of senior devotee. Another type of neophyte devotee is hearing from another senior devotee. And these two senior devotees disagree and their understanding of certain tattvas. And we're hearing from different types of senior devotees. So we'll express our understanding to each other. And then what ends up happening is that, well, how can you agree with the senior devotee I'm hearing from? That means you think that you're better than him. That's how it translates to those. Actually, that's a logical fallacy. But generally, we're not so intelligent, so we don't know when we're speaking illogically. In other words, just because I disagree with that one, because why am I disagreeing? I heard from another senior devotee who told differently. It's not like I'm challenging him directly, but I heard from another senior devotee, he's saying differently. So then they think that you are disagreeing with the guru I hear from, and therefore you're puffed up, you're arrogant. In this way, there's animosity generated in the community. So then the question is, well, what is the mature way of approaching that? Well, first of all, we have to see, do we want to be ass-like or do we want to be swan-like? Ass-like neophyte or swan-like neophytes? Or in the case that a few of us might be madhama adhikaris, ass-like or swan-like madhamas. So then the swan-like neophytes and intermediate devotees, they're trying to make progress in spiritual life. So they're not going to allow themselves to become overburdened by philosophical disagreements in the community. They would rather follow that path of thought that is bringing out the most faith. And they will not see to it to just go on and fighting with others on these points. However, when you're having a class like the Bhagavatam class, it's supposed to be meant, ideally, Prabhupada wanted that our society would be composed of madhyama adhikaris. And madhyama adhikaris means persons who will discuss the tattvas. They're not going to be getting into, I feel like this, so-and-so said that to me, and that really bewildered my mind. You know, these are the sort of questions that are usually coming up. That's why neophytes weren't allowed to speak so much. Shonaka Rishi was selected. You speak. You ask all the questions. Because the idea is that the speaker should be enlightened and the hearers should also be enlightened. Or at least there should be a few enlightened hearers. Otherwise, the thing never gets really off the ground. If the speaker is enlightened and all the hearers are neophyte, it'd be very hard for them to improve themselves, because they don't know what type of questions to ask. And so you will see that their questions will mostly be about body and mind. It won't be about anything more profound than that. So-and-so said this to me, my feelings were hurt. They did that to me, I was bewildered. You know, like this, how do I, all emotional stuff. And as you know, I like to say Prabhupada or Krishna covered all that in one shloka. He did just tolerate. In one shloka, he covers all the body-mind issues you'll be having. And then he gets into the tattva, jiva tattva, right? Text 14 of chapter 2, Krishna says, just tolerate. You know, because Arjuna will say, you've talked about matter and spirit, that's nice, but my mind is still bewildered by seeing friends and enemies, or this is my friends, my family members. So yeah, Krishna's like, yeah, yeah, just tolerate that. That's just sense perception. And then right after that, he gets into jiva tattva. Tattva jignasa. Jignasa, tattva jignasa. So you're supposed to be interested in understanding tattva, actually. What is nam tattva? What is bhakti tattva? What is guru tattva? What is jiva tattva? These sorts of things. Tattva jignasa. But the those who are like either ass-like neophytes or just like, they just passed over being totally ass-like, but they're not really swan-like either. It's like this like funny zone. They're interested in the body and mind only. And therefore, the hearer is supposed to be enlightened. And generally, those who were most senior, like if an enlightened speaker was given, they were given first, priority in asking questions. Shonaka Rishi is selected for it. Just like when we have a question, it's not like your hand just springs up. Huh? You a neophyte? What would you ask? Something foolish. So first you will see if those are mature. And then later on, we're nice and it's kind, so we allow everyone opportunity. Everyone can speak, everyone can ask something. But that won't be least beneficial. So the idea is that the society is supposed to have enlightened speakers and hearers. Those who speak are supposed to be enlightened in order to benefit the community the most. This is not New Agey philosophy where everyone is good. Everyone is not good. Therefore, Krishneti Yashagiritam, Manasadriyati. Rupa Goswami says you are to make distinction, even between, of course it's for the Madhyamas, between different levels of Vaishnavas. Then the enlightened Vaishnavas, they speak. And the unenlightened Vaishnavas, they hear. This is called Guham Akyati Prichati. Prabhupada clearly says that an experienced devotee speaks and an inexperienced devotee learns from him. Now we have the New Age idea, well, we can learn from everyone. Everyone can be teaching us. Even the non-devotees, they can also teach us something. You know, this is very popular, but that is not our philosophy. Although that may be true as in terms of a personal practice, but in terms of when there's a speaker, why is Prabhupada writing his books, the self-realized person, the right person, the real person? Why is he writing like this? So that's the idea. And then the hearers, in terms of your question, are supposed to be also enlightened. So then they will ask the questions. And you'll find that there will be, if the hearer is enlightened and the speaker is enlightened, there may be differences or apparent differences amongst their understanding. And so you might see them going back and forth in the class. And what happens to the neophyte devotees when they see that, two things happen. They see that there can be mature differences. There can be differences between Vaishnavas handled in a mature way. It sounds like they're blaspheming each other. And also they get a taste for the topics, seeing that these topics have so much richness in them. Because normally when you hear a class, it's just like you're hearing one person's perspective or realizations, whatever. That may not always create richness, or you may not always be able to perceive the richness of the discussion just hearing one angle. Generally, in order for there to be perception, there needs to be contrasting features. Just like you see the sign there on the wall, there's a black backdrop and then there's golden words. So the contrast allows for easy perception. So generally, in order to perceive the richness of any topic, there should be some contrasting feature to it, some disagreement. And when there's that in the open community, that creates richness for the topic. Taste for the Bhavatam will come up. But if everyone thinks there should be no different voices, you know, everything should be one voice, everything should be the same, then it will be very, not very enlivening, generally speaking. So the mature way is to try to become swan-like and try to be interested in progress. And in the open communities, when we're having discussions and so on, we should ask our questions respectfully, but clearly and strongly. Even if there is a disagreement, that is okay. Kaviraj Goswami says we shouldn't shy away, or don't be lazy. Sadanta balayas chitta nakara alas. Don't be lazy. Alasa means laziness. Don't be lazy in discussing the Siddhanta just because it may be controversial. He writes this at the end of chapter 2 of the Alilila, which is the most controversial chapter, because in that chapter he's saying that Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself, the source of all other avatars. So most of the other Vaishnava traditions, first of all, they don't accept the concept of an avatari. So that itself is a controversial thing. And that Lord Chaitanya is himself God, the avatari. That's like, all right, that's like kind of like fighting words. So chapter 2 is a very controversial chapter, and he ends the chapter by saying this. Don't shy away from discussing the Siddhanta, even though it may be controversial, because such discussions will make the mind attached to Krishna. Well, especially when there's enlightened hearers and speakers discussing that, neophytes seeing their respectful dealings, but deep discussion of it, they will get taste for the topics. And that way their own maturity improves. They see that it doesn't have to be a me versus them sort of situation. And Mother Donna Kayla is going to say something about that.
I was just thinking about how in the 19th chapter of the Majja Lila, it's described that the devotees have to be expert gardeners to cultivate our bhakti plant. And those who are taking even the slightest responsibility for others also have to be expert gardeners. So I was just thinking about your point about ass-like and swan-like neophytes and majjhimas, that sometimes we see seniors or people who are leading others in any way almost being overprotective, like a doting mother, then the child never really grows up. I was talking to one mother yesterday. She has two kids, 35 and 36, and they're still totally dependent on their parents. They can't go out and get a job because they're like, they were so babied, spoiled, whatever, in their mid-30s, and they still can't go out and take care of themselves. So I was thinking that sometimes in the name of being a careful gardener, we try to put up all these brick walls around the tender creeper, the sprout, so that no wind comes in and knocks it over. But actually, when you're trying to grow trees and they come out and they're little sprouts, at the beginning, yeah, you have to stake them up. But really, at a tender age, they're not supposed to be staked, and you're supposed to let the wind blow on them, because they actually become strong, because they have to learn how to resist the wind, you know? So it seems like sometimes we're almost guilty of keeping people, yep, neophyte, because we're so afraid we're going to challenge their tender shraddha, and we're afraid they're going to go away. When in fact, the expert gardener knows how to challenge them in such a way that they grow. You know, so it just seems like maybe in the name of protecting institutional membership that we sometimes make that mistake of being overprotective.
This problem is also augmented by is augmented by our, at least in this, that's, I'll call it my opinion, but it's shastrically grounded, that our faulty process in terms of the guru-disciple relationship. In other words, devotees are often pigeonholed into accepting gurus prematurely before they've been allowed to hear broadly and see where their natural faith is actually going. So then what happens is they've prematurely accepted a relationship, and then later on they may hear something in which their natural faith is moving. And when they start to have questions about that and the movement of their natural faith against a relationship that may have actually been accepted prematurely, the process wasn't really followed properly, waiting 1 year, examination, seeing if your faith was actually going there, etc. Then there creates confusion in the mind of immature disciples. And as seniors or anyone who's giving care, we are also at fault in allowing that premature relationship to be established. People come to you and they say, I want you to guide me this and that. Because you may have gave one or two charismatic classes and they feel that they're, okay, that's nice. So you hear for some time and see if your natural faith is going there. And what you also see is you will be hearing other things also. Especially in the modern world of technology, you're going to be hearing from a lot of things. And that will generate doubts. And then you'll present those doubts to those persons in whom you are claiming to have faith in. And if they can answer their doubts very effectively, then your faith naturally grows in them. And I feel that what happens in many cases, we do hear other things, and then those doubts are brought. And instead of dealing with the doubt, we just shut them out from the world. Don't hear anything else. And that will be an expression of your gratitude and so on, like this. And that way you get closed off in this way. And then devotees remain neophyte as a result. So I feel that this problem is augmented by the faulty approach to the guru-disciple relationship in the modern day. This is not my opinion, by the way. This is the opinion of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. In the essay he writes called Pancha Samskara, he discusses this faulty process of guru-disciple relationship. Devotees need to be attentive to where their faith is naturally moving. And that will include those who guide us being able to answer. Not only our practical doubts, you know, it's not that someone can just help us practically, that's the criteria. They help us get our life together and become peaceful, in other words. Our real problem is not a practical one as much as it is an existential one. So they have to be able to answer the existential questions. In other words, the questions dealing with tattva. And anyone who's hearing or studying Prabhupada's books, they will have those doubts. And those sorts of existential questions are to be presented to the guru, particularly Jignasu Shreya Uttamam. And if the guru can answer those questions with clarity, at that time your faith will be clear. This is a person I have faith in, and that will be more likely your guru. But if it's just like the practical considerations and so on, that is part of the faultiness in this sort of process. So we become responsible for keeping people neophytes in this way. Om Tat Sat is already 8:32. That discussion is going in the hot direction. So then more questions will start to come up. Well, I have a question about this, you know, whenever. But we have the brahmachari meeting, yes? So we'll end now. Thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.